thanks, Fernando, actually, for organizing my talk and everything.
This is joint work with Robert Koenig, and you can find our paper actually on the archive right here. So what am I going to do? Actually, I will first tell you what are we actually trying to accomplish. So I will talk about transmitting classical information over classical and also quantum channels. I suspect actually that most of you know all about this, but I want to do it anyway, so be clear. Then I want to say what is actually a strong converse, and I want to tell you what our result is. And after that, we'll get more technical and look at how we can actually do this. Okay, I mean, as I said, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. So we want to transmit classical data, so we have some ended long string. We can encode this string, maybe into some error-correcting code. And we want to transmit it over n copies of some noisy channel. And we can perform some decoding, and we get back some x tilde 1 up to x tilde n, which hopefully, of course, will be equal to the original input. So in general, we are interested when this is chosen uniformly at random. And this here will be our guess for the input string. And the measure that we're interested in is what is the success probability when we want to send n bits chosen uniformly at random. So here we take the average over all strings, and we're interested in what is the probability that what we output here is equal to the input. And the maximization here is taken over all possible encodings and possible decodings at the end. And in fact, yes?
Definitions of channel capacity where you talk about mutual information, special case where you have that prior distribution. Maybe you're going to comment on that later.
Yes, I will say more about capacities later. So I will also talk about transmitting bits reliably. And in fact, I will say that bit string can be transmitted reliably if the success probability, the average success probability, is 1. Makes sense. So that means that in fact what comes out here is equal to the original input. So maybe as a warm-up to understand this problem a bit better, I mean, one thing you're surely all familiar with is if I have some n-bit string here, and I can use little n copies of the qubit identity channel. So this means that I can transmit n classical bits using little n qubits. And I mean, it's clear that we can do this reliably if the number of classical bits is less or equal to the number of qubits or uses of this identity channel that we can use. Because every classical bit is just encoded into one qubit. So on the other side, Polevo has shown that if the number of classical bits is strictly greater than the number of qubits, then we can actually not do this perfectly. So I mean, I guess it's clear that what matters here is actually the rate. So the number of classical bits that we want to transmit per uses of this channel. So here, just the qubit identity channel.
Mm-hmm. About demanding that the probability of success be actually equal to 1, are you going to make that some limiting goes to 1 thing?
Yes. So what this means actually, I mean, I've not talked about this, it means that in the limit where n goes to infinity, this will be 1, or exponentially goes to 1.
Right. And presumably Holovo showed that if you try to transmit more, then it's bounded away from 1?
That's it. So let's maybe start with classical channels. So n is a classical channel. We have a random n-bit string. And some of you already mentioned it. So channels coding the answers, but we can actually manage to reliably transmit n-bits. If and only if the rate, so the number of bits per channel used, is smaller than the C here, and this C is called the capacity of the channel. Again, I'm sure you all know this. So, what do we know about the capacity of transmitting classical data? Let's look at first half, what's below the capacity, so the rate is below the capacity.
So as I said, we know from Shannon that if we want to send n, so I will always write this now as n, number of Shannon uses times this rate r, divide it, so again in the limit. So if the rate is smaller, we can transmit the binary. So this means that there exists some encoder and some decoder that has probability 1, or exponentially close to 1, s n equals to 1. So what happens above the capacity? And in fact, it's known that for any channel, any classical channel, any classical channel, there exists some constant gamma, such that the success probability decreases exponentially in n. So I mean, this is positive, so the success probability falls off exponentially. And this is what's known as a strong converse. And it's somewhat nice because it allows us to interpret the capacity as the measure of how useful is the channel for transmitting information. So below the capacity, we can send information. But as soon as we move above the capacity, our success probability falls off rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Like a universal constant? It doesn't depend on our
answers. So it depends on the channel. And actually, so let me maybe say more about this again. Okay. So what happens in the quantum case? So we know that if we are below the capacity, so we don't have quantum channels, then
just a historical note, did it really take 16 years to prove that you can't transmit above the capacity? Or is there a distinction between a strong and a weak converse?
Yes, so So a weak converse simply means that the success probability is bounded away from 1. A strong converse says that the success probability falls off exponentially.
Okay.
I mean, a weak converse, you could still be pretty good. So, in the quantum case, it's known that if the rate is below the capacity, then there exists some quantum encoding and some decoding that allows you to achieve the capacity in the sense that you can actually send so many bits through one thing. So, in this talk, I will talk about this region here. Namely, if we have quantum channels, but the rate is above the capacity. Yes, so I have not formally defined yet what capacity is here. And actually, I will do this later when I will actually look at the proof. I only really wanted to. So to look at like how could we possibly prove a strong converse in the quantum case, let's maybe look at what this coding problem looks in a quantum setting. I mean, I guess it's all obvious to you, but so we have a string, and an encoding, so we can encode the string somehow in some stable x, possibly entangled over many uses of the channel. And at the end, we can make a decoding, so really in the quantum case, this decoding is just some PUVM, the PUVM elements E sub X. So what does the success probability look like? So we want to send n bits. So again, we average over these bits. And this, of course, is the probability that given the state rho X, we actually output it. And here the maximization so is taken over all possible encodings and decoding PUVM. So as maybe a warm-up, let's prove a strong converse for the quantum identity channel. So here we have n qubits at our disposal. So this, in this case, this is actually quite easy. So we want to send so many bits, remember? So this is our quantity of interest. But we can first upper bound it using the fact that, in fact, all of these states are smaller than the identity. And of course, we have that all these PVM elements sum up to the identity and into PVM. So this means that, in fact, the success probability falls off exponentially when the rate is larger than the capacity, and the capacity here of the qubit identity pair is just 1. Let's call this from Holleva. Okay. So the goal is now to prove a statement which is, of course, like this one, but not for the identity channel, but for more complicated channels. So there are some things actually already known about this problem, namely in the case where we restrict ourselves to performing some tensor product encoding. So, in fact, Andreas Winter and also Ogawa and Nagaoka have shown in 1999 that a strong converse exists for this particular setting. Of course, if we restrict ourselves to some kind of product encodings, one could talk about the product state capacity, meaning the number of bits we can, which determines the number of bits we can send reliably, if we are only allowed to use a tensor product encoding. And so actually, such a strong converse, of course, corresponds intuitively to the study of what happens above and below the product state capacity of the channel. So what makes this problem a bit more difficult, evidently, is that we could not use a product encoding, but it might be advantageous to use entangled encoding. And in fact, Hastings, as you all know, has recently shown that this can in fact help. So there do exist channels for which these entangled encodings provide a definite advantage. So just to summarize, before our work, in fact, it was only a weak converse was known to hold in the general case. So Robin, this is what a weak converse is, as I said. And in fact, note that it's not clear that if the product state capacity is equal to the capacity, then a strong converse is immediate. So in fact, entanglement might help if we are above the capacity, even for channels where otherwise the product state capacity is equal to the capacity. So I guess so far everything is quite clear. And now I want to state the result and then we'll go on about proving. So as I said, so our result applies to some noisy channel from some input space to some output space. And in particular, it applies to, say, the qubit depolarizing channel. Any unital qubit channel. And in fact, more generally, any channel that has the following two properties. First of all, it has additive maximum output alpha entropy. And if you are unfamiliar with this quantity, I will define it actually later in the proof. And also, the channel is group covariant. So that means that the following relation holds. And in fact, the representation of the group in the output space is irreducible. So maybe for, I mean, there's people in the audience who know a lot about this quantity. And in fact, I just want to mention that, in fact, this quantity here is additive. If the maximum output alpha norm, which you might be more familiar with, is multiplicative. It's the same thing. Okay. So our result is that for any such channel, there indeed does exist some constant, such that the success probability falls off exponentially. So we prove this from humans, yeah? Yes, so I would like to mention, actually, I was going to get to that. So actually, for any such channels, it is known that the product state capacity is equal to the capacity. But it does not mean, this does not imply a strong converse. So actually, I only want to look at this particular case during the proof, because in fact, so it's probably immediately clear that this qubit depolarizing channel is a special case. And indeed, any unital qubit channel is a special case, which is using some trick of Pinion Riskin. Mm-hmm. No, it's not for its end. So all of these properties need to be.
For DP and box for any for some alpha.
Ah, that's a good point. So in fact it needs to be additive for alpha greater than one. And it's sufficient if it's additive for alpha close to. So it doesn't need to go all the way up to infinity. So there are channels, for example, the Werner related channel, for which this is only true in the interval between two and one alpha between two and one. But that's not. And actually, therefore, all the channels get existence. I mean, these are nice channels. And we will see actually later when we need these properties. OK. So let's show how we can actually obtain this. And I first want to tell you the main steps. First of all, we want to, so this problem, you might be somewhat, you don't know really how to approach this. So let's relate it to some kind of entropy quantity. And in fact, we'll derive some properties of this quantity and show that it's additive for the channels of functions. And this will allow us to do this. OK, so let's start there. And in fact, throughout this talk, I want to give you some intuition and relate actually how what happens below the capacity to how we're going to approach this problem above the capacity. So they're actually quite similar, and maybe if you're familiar with Mexico, too. So let's look at what happens below the capacity. So below the capacity, this capacity I'm talking about all the time, which is actually defined like this. This is a regularized version of the Benevel quantity, which you're probably familiar with. And in fact, for rates below the capacity, the following is known. So this means that exactly as n grows large, you will converge to 1. Okay.
So how could we?
Maintenance context is just mean.
So regularized simply just means this.
Maybe it with n is infinity.
Yes.
Okay.
And is that for all delta greater than or equal to 0? At the very bottom?
So there is some delta. Okay. So let's see how we can do above the capacity. And in fact, what we're going to do is something very similar. So let's try and find some analogous quantities, and maybe we can relate them to the success problem. So let's define the regularized version of this alpha Benevel quantity. So you can think, so this here again is the alpha quantity of some channel, which is defined as the maximization over input states to this channel of the Benevel quantity of this S1. So you can think of this as being some kind of Rainy entropic version of this quantity over here. And we're going to see shortly that in fact we can upper bound, so again n is large, we can upper bound the success probability in terms of this quantity. Okay.
Question? The chi alpha looks like just looking at it, it sort of looks like just a Rényi entropy, whereas chi has two terms. There's the entropy of the average and the average of the entropy. Right? So all of us quantity is a difference between two entropies.
Yes.
Are there two entropies hiding in the chi alpha?
I have to say, I actually don't know. I don't know if it's like Newberg in some other form.
Okay.
Just for entropies, like as alpha approaches, I don't remember, maybe one or something, it approaches the Shannon entropy. Is there some similar relationship?
Yes. So again, so you look at alpha greater than one. Okay. So you've already mentioned, actually, Robin, that for the channels to consider, this quantity is additive. And why is it nice if the channel has some additive related quantity? It's because it allows us to evaluate this quantity, this regularized quantity, more easily, because it's just equal to Poisson. So wouldn't it be convenient, maybe, if for all channels this would also be additive? So let's keep this in mind. But let's first actually see how we can manage to make this relation additive. So let's rewrite this successfully. And so I will call sigma x the state that arises when the channel is applied to some input state for x, some encoding of x. And so this is just the definition. And let's make some transformations in this quantity, which are actually quite easy. Namely, we can occupy this quantity here in this fashion. So what have we done here? We've used the fact that, in fact, if you have some function of the form y to the 1 over alpha, the alpha is greater than 1, it's operator one total. And in particular, this means, and then of course, because this guy here is smaller than the sum of this thing, but we can upper this one. But for example, we can do one more thing, namely because, of course, again, this is a pure element, this is true, which allows us to make this step. And finally, of course, this is easy, it's hard to see because maybe you've seen these quantities for the first time. We're going to rewrite this in terms of chi alpha. And let me just remind you, chi alpha was defined in this particular way. And here we look at the uniform distribution.
Mm-hmm. This is the reason why you're using these Renyi entropies, right? It's because
yes. It's
the only way you're able to. I mean, otherwise, like, okay, I didn't see the motivation for using a Renyi entropy until just now. It's just because that's what you need to make.
Yes, it's the minimum cost, yeah. Okay. So I've not used the regularized version because it's more convenient this way. So let me just remind you. So now we have upper bound of the success probability in this way. And now we're actually going to stop considering the success probability, but going to study this quantity chi alpha. And as you can see, it's intuitive. It would be very convenient if it would be better. Okay. So let's first derive some properties of this quantity chi alpha. And again, let's look at what happens below the capacity to see maybe in which direction we can go. So below the capacity, one can actually relate this chi alpha quantity to the relative entropy that's been shown by Schumacher in this moment. So this is the relative entropy. Here we minimize and maximize over input states to each other. So let's try something similar. Namely, let's look at the ring entropy version of the relative entropy. And in fact, we look at it. So this point, I should say that this quantity previously has been considered by the Gates and also by Huhn and Yamagata. And for the character alpha is smaller than 1, you would just use it for alpha, right? And you might wonder actually what's going on in this definition. So of course we only have the inward and support of sigma. But so inspired by this relation, maybe it would help us if we could relate chi alpha to this ring entropic version of the relative entropy. And in fact, this is exactly what we're going to do. So if you lower down chi alpha, again, using a very similar property, we can now minimize over, so sigma alpha is a state of the alpha system of the channel, and we can in fact upper bound it by minimizing over input space states to the channel. Okay, looks very similar. And we'll see shortly where these actually use. So I'm not going to do this actually, maybe I should go back. I will not do this yet. It actually, we follow the steps of Schumacher in this moment, more or less. Maybe there's some small things, properties we have to show about this property, but otherwise it's roughly the same. Okay. So we know that not about the success probability of this problem. We can relate this quantity to other quantities, and now let's use this to show that chi alpha is additive for all channels. So let's again first look at what happens below the capacity. Below the capacity, Bolero has shown that if the channel has these group covariant properties, then we can rephrase this chi alpha quantity in the following way. So this here is the mean output entropy of the channel. So maybe if you want to enter chemically, so the minimum output entropy, and actually that should be no mean. The minimum output entropy is equal to the minimization over space one. But we minimize the input states in the channel, and this here is just the fun one image. No big surprise. Okay. So what are we going to do? Let's go back to the case for a buffer capacity. And let's try and do something which is sort of similar. And instead of considering the von Neumann entropy, as you might have suspected, we're going to consider a radiotropic version of the quantum entropy. And so for this radiotropic version of the von Neumann entropy, one can of course define a similar quantity as over zero. So this is what I previously called the minimum output alpha entropy. So here we just minimize over all input states in the channel of this radiotropic version of the phenomenon. And in fact, I'm going to show now that we can rewrite this quantity in a very similar way, not just using this radiotropic version. So, as you might have suspected, we're going to use the fact that we can relate chi alpha to the alpha relative entropy. So let's keep that in mind. And in fact, we show something more, which I'm not going to do, it's not so hard actually, that chi alpha for the particular class of channels that we can consider, in fact, these qualities here are chi, and they are achieved, in fact, when both the output state, as well as the input state to the channel, are then the maximum mixed states. Not that it's actually not hard to see that any covariant channel is uniform, so this is clearly that this is mixed state. Okay. So if you believe me that these two things hold, we cannot rewrite the following point. So actually, remember that we wanted to rewrite this time for the space reasons and a little bit. So let's start over here with equal. And let's perform this transformation. So to show this first equality, so let me just remind you of the definition of the alpha. So I mean, it's clear what's going on here. We take rho hat to be this time. So it's going to give us this part. And we take sigma hat to be the maximum mixed state on the output system, which is going to give us this fact. And let's just rewrite it, because remember we're heading towards this quantity. So here again, I first use the definition of the quantity to obtain this statement. I guess it's pretty clear. So now we have transformed chi alpha into yet some other expression. Now, why is this going to be useful? So, this is what we just showed, if you believe me. What other properties of this quantity might be useful? So, first of all, note that if this is sub-additive, so this means that actually n times this guy here is less than chi alpha of the tensor product term, And note that this is clear because remember that in this quantity here we maximize over input states to the gem. But we can always say, okay, we maximize only over product states as input, which gives us this direction. Now, maybe let's go back there where these alpha norms appear. So note that, in fact, this quantity here can be rewritten in the following form. And you may be familiar with this. And this here is what's normally called the maximum output alpha norm of a gem. And it's clear now to see that if this guy here would be multiplicative, then this here would be additive because we have the law here. Okay. Let's continue. Let's put everything together. I mean, we have not done very much. So let's use the sub-additivity of this quantity on the left hand side. So here we have n, and then we just use this relation, which of course is not advised if you have only one copy of the gene. So you write this in terms of this minimum output alpha entropy. So on the other side, actually this should be equality. We can rewrite it in this particular form, also the relation we just gave you. But remember that, in fact, this quantity here is additive for the channels we consider. And so left-hand side equals right-hand side. So we have actually shown that now that this quantity here is additive for our channels. Now let me maybe go back to the question, maybe whether we needed both conditions. So for this here, we needed the fact that the channels are covariant. For this here, we need that the alpha norm is multiplicative. So we need both things. Okay. So like I said, we need these two properties. And again, to give you some examples and where these actually come from. So we need to invoke the, we need to use known results that tell us that certain channels have multiplicative maximum alpha norm. And this is known for the three-dimensional depolarizing theory. This is some result by Q. It's also known for a unical cubic channel, using some result of Q, together with Q and this one. It's also known, for example, for the Werner-Helevo channel, has been shown by many people independently. Okay. So we have done all these things, so now we want to combine them to actually show that we obtain a stronger converse for our channels. Should actually stop me if there's any further questions. Okay. So we recall that we could rewrite the success probability with the upper bound it using this quantity here. Now we've shown that for our channels, this quantity here is additive. So in fact, we're back to this scenario. And it's maybe intuitive, in fact, that if this is going to be additive, then we're back into the case that people have already considered, namely where you restrict yourself to product encodings. And in fact, once we have shown that this quantity is additive, we're actually already done now, using these results by Ogawa and Nagaoka. And what do they say? They say that for any rate, it is above the capacity, so I've left out the little stripe here actually, because for all channels this is equal to the regulation. There exists some data such that for all alpha in this interval, so seriously, this is actually the reason why we only need alpha, this multiplicative property for alpha close to one. So for all such alphas, this here is greater than zero. Note that if this guy here is greater than zero, then of course this here will fall off exponentially.
Mm-hmm. Think something. Why isn't there a beta in the expression on the bottom?
There's no beta. It just says that there exists some beta
Oh, such that for all alpha between yes. and one, yeah, okay.
So in fact, you might, actually that's a really good question, because you might say, what is the best form of we can achieve? What is the best alpha for any given day? What is the best alpha? And so actually going back to the talk I gave last week about this noisy storage model, here we actually need to solve this optimization problem and determine the best alpha to get the best parameters. But what this says is that there is one. So maybe let me point out that of course we have shown that this is additive for our channel, but in fact, if you would want to show a strong converse for other channels, you can of course again now study what how does this quantity phi alpha behave. Okay. As I said, so if it's greater than zero, we are done and we've obtained a strong converse. So let me go to some open questions. So first to summarize, so we have obtained the strong converse, and it's interesting because it allows us, at least for the channels that we considered here, to really interpret the classical capacity at the threshold for information transmission. So if we're below the capacity, we can send information. If we're above the capacity, then the success probability decreases exponentially. So as I just said, Richard, this has actually applications in this noisy storage model. The security of our new protocols depends on our strong converse. But of course, I mean, there is the obvious open question is to how can we prove a strong converse for other channels? And it's clear, I mean, I guess that from if you would like to do this, one way to approach it is to actually study this quantity by alpha star. And in particular, interesting, of course, would be channels whose label quantity itself is not additive. Not that actually I see no particular reason why this guy here would be additive in general, but there could exist other channels, other classes of channels for which this quantity here is additive. Okay.
So do you think it's possible that there are non-additive channels for which only a weak converse holds? There is so that if I'm transmitting above capacity.
I think that's an interesting question, but I honestly don't know. I think it may be possible, it's true.
Well, it's a logical possibility still at this point, but do you have an intuition? What would your guess be?
So my guess would actually be that at least for the transmission of our, this is going to be recorded at first.
We'll edit it out afterwards.
I have to say, I honestly don't know. I would guess that for the transmission of at least classical information, as n grows large, probably the existence is enough. But yeah, so, I mean, going back to this quantity, I don't expect this quantity, for example, to be additive for all channels.
Right.
I mean, intuitively, it's somewhat related to these alpha modes, which are also multiplicative, but it's not that but alpha entropy is not additive.
So, just I want to sort of make sure I've got this clear in my head. We have channels for which the holobo capacity, the holobo quantity is additive.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, we know that product state encodings achieve the capacity.
That's right.
And for those channels, or a subset of those channels, you've proven that the strong converse, not only for product, but also for entangled inputs.
That's right.
Are there any channels that do not, where we don't know that product states have achieved the capacity to which your theorem applies?
So there might exist such a thing, but I don't know it.
one other question. A while back, you had a slide where you cited Hastings' additivity.
Yes.
And I know that I had a question about that, but I've forgotten what it was. Would you be willing to page back to that slide?
Yes.
That was another question. Sorry. Right. So does, okay, Hastings showed that there exist pairs of channels, E and E bar, for which minimum output entropy is not additive.
Mm-hmm.
Does that necessarily imply that there exist channels with where that inequality holds? Because here we're talking about the capacity of n tensor n tensor n.
I mean, I guess simply we could take the channel tensor at the end function and can have some cross uses of E and E bar, for example.
You mean so I take a channel that's a convex combination of E and E bar?
No, you take it many times, and then sometimes you use E and sometimes you use E bar.
You have a switch,
yeah.
An extra qubit that you can put in. And if you set in that qubit 0, then it's E. If you set that qubit is 1, it's E bar.
Okay, so that suffices to prove that
yeah.
It's, okay. Cool.
This is the place to prove what?
What she says.
So, can you what's known about the cases where this strong converse does not exist?
What do we know about that?
Yeah.
Actually, I have to say, we don't know much about that in general.
So it's possible, like, that for all additive channels, the strong converse is...
It is possible that for all additive channels, the strong converse means. And it is maybe even possible that for all channels where phi alpha is additive, and where phi star is additive, actually also this alpha point is additive. Once.
No more questions. So we can finish the meeting.